Your support is important to Living on Earth. Donate today by pressing the donate link on the left of this page. Every bit helps. And thanks.
To talk about the latest research, we turn now to Professor Daniel Schrag. He studies climate change at Harvard and directs the University's Center for the Environment. He's also a member of President Obama's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology.
You know, there's a nice study that really put all of this together that came out this year from the National Academy. And basically, tripling atmospheric carbon dioxide levels, which we're likely to do in the next 100 to 150 years, is really unprecedented. And there's all sorts of things that are going to have difficulty adapting to that, including human society. We're going to see devastation of species. Something like 40% of biodiversity is ultimately threatened today because it's happening at so fast a rate that animals can't migrate. The other thing that came out in this National Academy report is the idea that fundamentally what matters to climate change is the total greenhouse gas emissions of the planet over the next 100 years. Some of the climate policies that are focused on getting a 10 or 20% reduction in the next 10 years or 20 years. In the bigger scale of things, actually, that doesn't matter so much. The bad news is that, of course, you have to ultimately drive greenhouse gas emissions to nothing to fix the problem.
What about the permafrost? There was a study that was reported on, I think, in the journal Science, on the melting of the permafrost that's under the Arctic Ocean. What did you think of that study?
Well, I think that study and many others similar to it have pointed over the last many years to the amplifying factor of the permafrost melting, which leads to lots of soil carbon, both in the form of methane and in the form of carbon dioxide being released to the atmosphere and providing a positive feedback to the burning of fossil fuels. Another way to think about this is that we've started the ball rolling with greenhouse gases from burning fossil fuels, and now the natural carbon system is going to take over. And the big question is, how fast does the methane and CO2 get released?
So what other studies from this past year looked into feedback loops from natural systems that might amplify climate change?
Well, one very important change that is continuing to occur is the melting of Arctic sea ice. And the big story this year was that we didn't set a new record in terms of the area of Arctic sea ice. But if you actually look at the images of the Arctic ice cap, what you see is that the area of very thick ice that's there perennially year after year was almost half of what it had been in 2007. So that even though there was a lot of ice cover, the actual permanent very thick ice had decreased significantly.
Now, Arctic ice is already in the ocean, so if it melts, it doesn't raise the sea level. What about the ice that's on the ground, places like Antarctica and Greenland?
When we project sea level changes due to melting of ice, we tend to be extremely conservative. And so, for example, in the latest IPCC report, what they did was they essentially assumed that the current rate of melting from Greenland would persist unchanged through the century, and that leads to only 5 centimeters of sea level rise from melting of Greenland over the entire century. Now, if you were actually doing a risk analysis, what you might do is perhaps assume that as the Earth warmed, the ice would melt in proportion to the warming. If you make that simple assumption, you end up with the result that was published this year showing that, in fact, a better estimate of sea level rise over the century is about 1 to 2 meters. So 3 to 6 feet of sea level rise threatens every coastal city in the world. It's a really big deal.
Let's talk about drought. What have we learned in the past year about the prospect of drought as a function of climate change?
Climate change is likely to bring more stress on both natural ecosystems and human society that will make dealing with droughts more and more difficult. For example, high-altitude glaciers all over the world in the tropics are melting at exponentially increasing rates. And since they're the source for a lot of water and very important strategic rivers all over the world, it means that when you have a drought because of meteorological conditions and you don't have the backup of mountain-fed streams and rivers, it makes dealing with that drought all the more difficult.
What about food? We're going from 6 billion, well, actually almost 7 billion people, to some 9 billion in 2050 or so. How will climate impact our ability to feed ourselves?
One of the interesting studies that's come out over the last few years suggests crops have a very complex relationship to not just rainfall, but actual temperature. From mild temperature increases, yields increase a little bit, and then they cross a threshold and drop very dramatically. And it's a nonlinear effect. A nice example is 2003 when Europe had that devastating heat wave, and crop yields dropped by about 30%. That 2003 temperature is likely to be the average temperature 100 years from now for summer. And there's a real question we have about plant physiology. Do we think our ability to genetically engineer plants and selectively breed them, will we be able to find crops that can produce high yields in a warmer climate? And currently, there's some research that suggests that no. In fact, there are real physiological limits to plants because of the cycling of water through their stems that may fundamentally limit the productivity. And we may see a big drop-off in food production.
Now, of course, you're close to the White House, being on President Obama's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology. How is the science that we've been discussing being presented in that setting? And what feeling do you have that the president gets this?
I have been in a meeting with the president where myself and a number of other climate experts briefed him directly, and it was very clear that the president does get it. He does understand how serious a problem this is. What he is struggling with during a rather severe recession is the political problem of how to get the American public concerned about acting on climate change when they're really worrying about their pocketbooks. And that's a very difficult problem. I don't envy him. But in terms of the science, in terms of the ultimate impact, he does understand it.
Harvard Professor Daniel Schrag, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Earlier this week, community members gathered in downtown Cancun to sing and pray in support of the UN Climate Summit.
Just ahead, a new scheme to save forests in Borneo. Keep listening to Living on Earth.